Welcome to Hanks for the Memories. You've got a friend in us. This is episode 20, Radio Flyer from 1992. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And Mike, to celebrate the occasion of this wonderful movie, we are recording live in person. You know, we've done a couple Hanks in person. We've done, it was Sunny.
Oh, yeah.
Round two, season two.
Those are our bosom buddies.
And then we did, oh, Man with One Red Shoe.
Oh, that's right.
In person at my house.
Yeah,
now,
Dabney
here we
Coleman.
Are again, Radio Flyer.
That's right, at my house this time. Yes, welcome.
So, the thing. So we are one episode away from the beginning of the run of Unimpeachable Classics, right?
It'll be
their run is in 2 weeks, and then after that it's going to be Sleepless in Seattle, then Philadelphia, then Forrest Gump. Like, it's just like, this is like the ascendance of Tom Hanks is right there.
Yeah.
And right here is Radio Flyer.
It's so weird that, like, this is stuck there. It's almost like the strangest pivot point I can imagine. Because he's, like, not credited.
So
in this movie, there's like a lot of weird stuff about him in this movie.
The most fascinating thing about this movie is that he plays an old Elijah Wood.
Yes. Do you think that would work today if they did Radio Flyer 2? I guess Elijah Wood's about, he's got to be older than Tom Hanks is in playing him, his old, because he's my age, so he's 40. If Hanks wasn't 40, no. So, like, it would be funny to see a side-by-side comparison.
I would love it.
Do you think they realize that they played each other in a movie? Like, if they bumped into each other?
I don't know, because they don't share scenes.
That's what I'm saying.
And there's also a third Hanks, like college age Hanks, which is the very, very end. You see from the back of him.
Oh, I missed
that. Like, he doesn't have any lines. He's just like, you know, when I was in college, I blah 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike, before we talk about this movie for I can't imagine more than 15 or 20 minutes, why don't you give the listeners synopsis? So here's also the one point of clarification I want to say.
Okay.
Reading reviews on Letterboxd.
All right.
This feels like a movie that a lot of kids maybe grew up with, and I think that there's a nostalgia play here for a lot of people.
Okay.
And so I apologize in advance
if we don't like it.
Nice to your favorite childhood movie, but you had never seen this before, I'm assuming, right?
No,
I never had either.
Yeah.
And so
I don't know. Ahead. Look, well, I'll just before I summarize, I'll just say, like, I you know, I didn't grow up with this movie. I would have probably been the perfect age for it when it came out. Mm-hmm. Richard Donner directed this thing, right? So it's got like an amount of prestige. I love Superman and Goonies and stuff like that. And I'm not going to be mean to it.
And I have trivia about Richard Donner too, so we'll get to that.
But, you know, I'll commence now. So
Radio Flyer. Yes. It's
good old Tom Hanks. It starts with him, like, reminiscing about his youth to his two sons there at the airport on an airstrip. And he's talking to them about how when he was a young Elijah Wood, him and his younger brother and his mom moved away after their dad left. And when they got to their new town, his mom started dating a very abusive man that wouldn't hit Elijah Wood, but would, like, beat the shit out of his brother and hit the dog and all kinds of stuff. Played by
Adam Baldwin.
No relation.
Who stated he will never do a role like the King ever again.
That was his name in this movie?
They called him the King. I don't know if I think he had an actual name, but I don't think they...
Okay. So so the children try and, like, escape into some kind of, like, fantasy life a la Bridge from Terabithia kind of thing, where, like, they play in the woods and they imagine, like, all this fantastic stuff. But it takes more of, like, a Stephen King turn for the worse.
Sure.
Along the way. It is relentlessly voiceovered by Tom Hanks. At times, like, for stretches of this movie, basically, you know, telling you what's happening on screen.
It's the only way that the movie has any ability to, like, convey anything happening.
Kind of. There's not a lot of dialogue in this movie, I noticed. Yeah, but it tries to be whimsical. Anyway, in the end, the kids believe that if Elijah Wood can launch his younger brother off this cliff on the Radio Flyer red wagon that they souped up, like,
because 10 years before another kid had done it.
Yeah, there's some legend about, like, if you can launch yourself off this cliff on your wagon, like, you keep going. And that's exactly what happens at the end. Like, he gets his brother away from the abusive guy. I believe the guy gets arrested. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I kind of tuned out because like the mom, like, it ends with Hanks explaining that, like, the mom never gave up looking for his brother.
Yes.
But Elijah Wood knew he was safe, and then eventually they started getting postcards from, like, around the world from, like, this, what, like, 8-year-old kid at first?
Yes.
Like, and it just wraps back around to Hanks being like, so, you know, like, that's the story of, like, your great uncle, the end.
So here's a more maybe succinct way to say it. It's the story of an abusive man who killed his stepson.
What? What?
Oh, causing the boy's brother to enter a state of delusion and forcing him to commit mail fraud one postcard at a time, all while Dr. Melfi did nothing to stop it.
Oh, okay. I see what they did there.
No, but so here's the thing.
Oh, it is. It is Lorraine Bracco.
It is Lorraine Bracco. So she plays the mom. So there is a lot of debate and a lot of discussion about whether or not the end should be taken literally. And Richard Donner says, yes, the ending should be taken literally.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fantasy movie. It's like a whimsical kind of...
So here's the thing. So when this movie came out...
I wish what you're saying is true.
I think... So, okay. So it has 33% of Rotten Tomatoes, 73% audience score. It cost $30 million to make. It made 4.6.
Whoa.
Critical whoa, commercial whoa, failure, whoa, whoa. Right?
Too dark for children. Too weird for adults.
Yes.
Like,
Roger Ebert and Roger Ebert and Leonard Maltin were both like, no, this like makes child abuse okay. It's just like, hey, kids, like fantasy is going to be escapism. It's like, no,
well,
that's not.
That's not what I took from. What I took from it is like children like can't process what's going on, so they escape into like a delusional sort of fantasy
yes.
world kind of thing.
So here's a little bit of backstory before I get into my my theory about the end. So this is written by a guy named David Mickey Evans. Okay. And he was this hotshot writer who I don't know if he'd ever like published or sold a script before.
Okay.
He sold the script for $1.25 million.
Whoa.
Back in
1990-ish. Whatever. Yeah. This was made in 92. So.
And so he was going to direct it as well. And so he gets hired to direct. They cast everybody. They shoot for 10 days. The studio's like, these dailies suck. You're fired.
Oh, no.
They bring in Richard Donner. They bring in Richard Donner's wife as a producer.
Yeah.
The budget doubles from 15 to 30 because they're like, Richard Donner gets $5 million.
Superman money.
They also cut out a ton of like supernatural and weird and surreal and fantasy elements.
You only get the bison and a few other things.
And so apparently there is that the guy, David Mickey Evans, later would write a novella based on his screenplay.
Hmm.
And there's...
Like fleshing things out a little more, like clarifying some stuff.
Yes. And so it's called The King of Pacoima. And in the novella, Hanks' sons are named Wilbur and Orville.
Oh, yikes.
And also, just for the record, their last name in this movie is Wright. Like, you see it. So they are the Wright brothers.
Oh, no. No.
And
wait.
The king,
no, they're
so here,
not.
So in the novella, the king dies of alcoholism, and it's strongly implied that Bobby, the brother, died in his flight. That Mike, the Tom Hanks character, imagines the flight as a way of rationalizing his own role in the accident, and then adult Hanks takes his sons to see the radio flyer on display in the National Aerospace Museum, where it floats without any means of suspension, so just like this magic
But that's
thing.
Not in the movie. They're just at some random airstrip.
So then Mike sees Bobby there, his brother, who apparently is maybe not dead, as an adult test pilot waiting to meet his nephews. So maybe that's a dream,
well, it's
too.
Just like a Bagger Vance situation kind of thing.
So they filmed that
Jack
ending.
Lemmon shows up as Bobby.
They filmed that ending.
They filmed that?
And they showed it to test audiences. They're like, what the fuck is this? Like, they didn't understand any of it. And
no.
So they scrapped it, and they just did the whole, like, wraparound where he's just like,
yeah.
Basically at the end, like, you know, never give up on your dreams. But that's
It's very Hank's fatherly advice in this movie in the beginning and end, but that is... I need to see that. You know what that... Like, all this edited stuff, I want... Like, the sword fight from Bonfire of the Vanities, this bizarro ending to this movie because it's so bizarro. That's incredible.
So Richard Donner says the end, Bobby's flight should be taken literally as though it happened. Like,
yeah.
He's like, he
actually
flies
off. That's how I took
it. But then he's an 8-year-old boy traversing the world?
Yeah, I know. That's how I took it. And that's why I was like, what? And that's why I gave this movie, what, like a 1.5?
Yeah.
It really just irked me in a lot of other ways. Aside from like hard to understand what's going on scene by, because there weren't even really like a lot of full scenes,
no.
You know, like just a lot of snippets. And I understand it's supposed to be some kind of like memory play going on, but it's, you know, it's still a movie and it's a mainstream Hollywood movie for children about abuse. You can't get like
a pretty sizable budget from
1992. Yeah, you can't get too artistic with that.
The only other trivia that I have is that the role of Mike, who's Elijah Wood, who I think does a pretty good job in this movie.
Oh, yeah, he's always good.
One of the other candidates, one of the other finalists, they had like 3,000 kids audition. They narrowed it down to 8. Obviously, Elijah Wood won, but Milo Ventimiglia was one of the other 8. So that's just
right.
A weird kind of coincidence that, like,
well,
you
so
know.
Elijah was like 11 or 12 when this came out. So I guess like maybe 10 or 11 when they shot it. Interesting. I didn't know Milo was acting that young. I didn't know of him until Heroes, right? Like, that's sort of... Because
right,
he's
now,
Rocky's son.
Yes, he is.
Yo.
Yo, Rock.
Yo, Dad.
See, oh, what was his first acting
I remember me, your son. Remember when you went to go live with Creed's son? You have like a real son. He eventually showed up, right, in one of them to help.
His first role was in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in 1995, where he played party guest number one. So this was like wildly earlier. I guess they're like, didn't get that part. I'm gonna go take it. You know,
he looks a lot like my friend Brian, who's a U.S. Marshal, but I also feel like he looks like Zachary Quinto's brother or something. Mm. You know, like,
was that ever a plot line on Heroes that he and Siler were related?
Oh, yes, it was.
There we go.
I think it turned out that they had like the same dad. That show went way off the rails, but that first season is wonderful. Loved it.
So, Mike, what was your favorite part in Radio Flyer?
The end. No, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. I think, you know, I can't really say Hanks, you know what I'm saying? But I think, like, Hanks, when we get to it, like, is so fucking fatherly in this. It makes me want to puke.
Oh, yeah, the answer to that question is definitely yes.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite part. Yeep, 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 boop, boop, boop.
Hold on, we're doing another?
Oh, it's like an Eli Roth, like, marathon here over at my house. Yeah, okay. It was just Knock Knock, now it's The Green Inferno. But what is my favorite part of this movie? Let us see. I think...
Do you not have an answer?
I might not have an answer. You know what I think I'm going to go with? I'm going to try and spin this into like a positive is I like the general sort of idea they're going for, which I, you know, I mentioned like stuff like Bridge to Terabithia before, but I even feel like stuff like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe gets to this kind of thing where like children retreat while trying to deal with trauma because they're sort of too young to know how to do something like that and everything. And I appreciate the attempt here. Like, I could say that. Like, I understand what they're going for. I don't think that they pulled it off, but, you know, there aren't enough movies dealing with this kind of stuff. And it's kind of, like, bold and, like, they kind of have, like, some balls, like, trying to do this, I feel. And, like, you get away with it more now and stuff like It, right? Like, you got to spin it to, like, a horror movie. But this really is sort of, like, there's no genre here. It's really nebulous and weird and sort of, like, I'm not really seeing a lot of stuff like this. So I'm going to have to say my favorite thing is, like, the concept, I guess. Like, they, you know, the core of it. Like, they try, like, what they were trying to go for. Is that okay?
So the effort was there. It just wasn't the execution. All right. There are three specific things that I really liked. Number one, I like when they're hustling for golf balls. I thought that was kind of a cool, funny scene. You know, their kids are trying to get money. They're trying to build this flying contraption.
Yeah.
And so they go to, I think they live near a golf course, and they show up there, and they see these people just hitting golf ball after golf ball into this lake around surrounding a green. And they're like, there's got to be thousands of golf balls in there. And so the two of them and the dog go, and they sell golf balls for a quarter each. So they make like $9 one day. So this is, you know, probably 30 years ago or whatever, 25, 30 years ago. And so that's, you know, a sizable amount of money, especially for two kids, right? And I like that a lot. And then the next scene, they go to the convenience store, and they're like returning the glass bottles. And this kind of cheapens the last thing. Like, I felt like the one was cute. Now it's just like, why do two? Like, why not have, like, 10? Like, why do two? It was this weird thing. But I really did like the we could make money
doing this. Like the hustling kind of thing. That reminded me of, was that the Shia Goff movie where they, like, washed the balls and, like, sold them back or something? I don't know. I mean, I feel like we saw that somewhere along the way.
We watched a lot of golf movies.
Yeah. It is kind of strange.
I also really like the job. So there's this, like, gang of misfits in town that, like, it hates them, I guess because of the new kids. And they show up one time, and the cop, who's the cop is somebody famous. He's recognizable. I don't know if he's famous, but like I've seen him in other things, and I can't remember who the cop is.
It's Mr. McAllister, the guy, the dad from Home Alone, who's in Chud, the guy
John
from Chud.
John Hurd?
Maybe. He recently passed away, but what's interesting is if you watch Chud, he's in it, and so is one of the sticky bandits is in Chud, not Joe Pesci, the other guy. So it's funny. Daniel Stern. They were both in Chud, and then they were both in Home Alone. They don't have any scenes in Home Alone, but it would have been interesting to be like, hey, I haven't seen this since Chud.
That would have been, you know, and then Chud shows up in Us. Like, Chud is all over the place.
Yeah. it sure is.
it sure is. That's the end of that conversation. Number two, so the kids are mean to him. They want to keep. And so there's a scene where, like, they're hanging out, and Elijah does not get beat up. It's the younger brother who's always the victim of the father. And every time something goes wrong, because the dad comes home, or the stepdad comes home, the king comes home, gets drunk, gets mad about something, and beats the kid.
Right.
And Dr. Melfi is just like, I don't know what's going on. It's never going to happen again. Yeah. And it keeps happening. There's a scene where the kids show up and, like, come, we want to play football. We want to play football. And you can hear, via Tom Hanks' voiceover, because of course it is, his, like, lament that, like, I can't leave the kid, because if I leave the kid, he's going to get beat up, but I also, like, want to have friends and whatever, and they go, and, like, I think that eventually, you know, they go, and they all beat
they
the shit out of
him. They beat him up.
They
yeah.
play a game that we casually, I mean, wildly offensive now, but we used to play a game called Smear the Queer. Do you know that one?
Whoa, no.
I think there's worse names than that, but basically, you have a football, and whoever has a football, you just, like, beat them up.
Oh, yeah, we used to call that, like, you're it, I think, or something like that.
Less offensive. But there's also worse, more offensive things than that, but basically, they're playing that, like, it's not football, but it's like a bunch of kids with a football.
Right, like a keep away kind of thing.
And then what's nice about that is that Elijah Wood basically kicks the shit out of the leader, and then they're all like, yeah, go get him or whatever. But I thought that generated a lot of tension, like the conflict between, like, do I stay and try to protect my brother? Like, I can't really stop it, but I don't want to leave it. But I also, like, I thought that was a really kind of well-done scene. And then there was one other one that I really liked, and it's so obvious what it is, and then they say his name. It's like, well, yeah, of course, like, of course. But when they get gas at the end rev up to go, and it's very obviously the kid who did it 10 years ago was the gas station attendant.
Who failed, yeah. And he grew up to be a gas station attendant in that town.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you hear somebody say, like, hey, Fish, phone call. It's like, well, yeah, of course. Like, who else would it be? But, like, it's this very sweet, tender moment that's kind of undermined by, like, oh, they might not get it. But I thought those were, like, in a merely 2-hour movie, there were three scenes I was like, oh, this actually really works for me.
I actually quite like how it started with that super flashback in black and white and everything, and it was like, to tell this story, we have to go back to before I was born. And so, like, if I had to pick, like, a scene or moment or something, it was that early on, but...
So let's talk about the things you didn't like.
Oh,
what
my
didn't
God.
You like about this movie?
So, I mean, there's two specific
things...
Like,
one other thing that I liked is that all movie long, I kept thinking of Birdie. You flew? How you flew?
Oh, yeah, Birdie.
Yes.
You flew. So, obviously, you know, with the dog violence is terrible in this movie. And that
Shane, the dog Shane, is a good dog.
Yeah, that bothered me so much. Like, just they've gone so far. And it's like you said, it's almost like, oh, they're not going to get it. Like, they're kids watching this movie. They won't understand. We really got to, like, pour it on thick. I think they went a little too far showing, like, the gore and stuff for that dog and everything. And then.
But the dog does live. That's important.
Yes. And I think that felt like a rewrite. Maybe, where, like, the dog did die, and it's like, wait, like, this is going too far, this is too bad. And then Hanks's voiceover, I mean, it's just fucking relentless. It is just, like, I don't mind if it's there, here, and there, but there's, like I said, literally parts where he's, like, reading the fucking script or something. Like, he's reading, if you're doing a script reading, he's the guy not reading the dialogue, he's reading all the stage direction. He's like, and then my brother and I went over there and picked up an apple and tried to share it, and then I said, it's just, like,
there was one
crazy
voiceover, and I don't remember when it was, but there was one where it was like, oh, like, here's actually, like, he felt like he was emoting. Like, it felt like he was acting as opposed to just narrating it. And, like, it sort of caught me off guard because there's so much of it.
It's too much.
And I was just like, oh, huh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm not opposed to having it because I know it's like Stand By Me does it perfectly, right? And this just, it's kind of felt like they're trying to do a lot of that Stand By Me kind of thing. But I think what worked for that movie is they were like 5 years older than these kids, or so, or four at least years older than these kids.
Plus, they swear because they're Stephen King kids. Oh, but these kids do swear because they play, again, I don't know why this is in the movie.
Oh,
they play
the banana song.
Banana Fofana.
Yeah.
They play it with Buck. And of course, that's a bad thing. And they're like, oh my God, I'm sorry. I'll wash my mouth out with soap. I'm sorry. I'm just like, why is that in the movie? What you, like, I guess they're showing, like, hey, they're good kids.
Plus, the, you know, it's PG-13. I'm assuming they're allowed one fuck. So why not, like, have, like, the little kids say it?
Who gets the fuck? My biggest problem with the movie, and I know that this is told from a kid's point of view, and it's supposed to be sort of like a fairy tale story, but I hated that the dad was such a caricature. Like, he's just pure evil.
You never see his face.
You see it toward the end, but yes, for a while you don't see it, and then, like, he's crying, and, like, the camera cuts down, and he's covering his face with his hand.
Yeah.
I think after he reforms, you might catch, like, a quick glimpse of it. Like, I thought that was cool, but I felt like it was too on the nose. It's the same reason you just mentioned It before.
Yeah.
Why I don't like It is because there's no shades of gray. It's like, oh, he's bad.
Oh, well, there's all that gray water.
But no, but I mean...
But I hear you.
It's still the same thing. Like, he's just... There's nothing redeeming about him. And it's like, if he's that bad... Like, I know that this is a kid's movie. You're not going to have scenes with just, like, Dr. Melfi. But, like, there's got to be a reason why she still stays with him.
Right.
Other than just, like, she was left once and she doesn't want to be left again and she's willing to tolerate it. Like, I know that that might be the mentality, but, like, nobody's just a pure villain. And in this movie, he's just, like, he's just a monster.
Yeah.
And it just feels annoying that he doesn't have anything to do other than just, like, hit the kid and drink.
Right. Well, what bothers me about that, too, is that it's being told by an adult. He's remembering what he was doing as a child and stuff, but he's still an adult, right? So, like, he should have that detail filled in. You know what I'm saying? Like, it almost, that's why it almost feels like the beginning and end feel like they were tagged on after the movie.
Yes.
Because they needed help explaining what the hell was happening.
Yep.
And like, regarding, you know, hiding the adult's face and this being from, like, the child's point of view, even a movie like E.T., right, where they keep, you know, the guy, like, it's a reveal at the end of the second act. Oh, the guy who they've been chasing has been chasing E.T., you finally see his face, and it's like, oh, he's actually a nice, normal guy. And, like, the reveal is like a reversal. And I don't know. I just feel like if they did go a little more into, if we had a scene without the children, right? So it was like actual reality, mm-hmm. and we could see him maybe try and get a job or get like down on his luck and like reality of what he's actually going through instead of like this inflated version of their, you know, perception.
And I think to the movie's credit, it's committed to the story it's telling, but again, it still doesn't make for a satisfying...
They don't go far enough with, like, the crazy fantasy stuff, you know?
Well, I think they wanted to, and they just cut it all out. Like, when Richard Donner took it over, they tried to ground it, and I don't know why they grounded it, because, like, if the story is about how kids escape a traumatic situation through fantasy, why is there only one of those scenes?
Right.
You know, it's either do a bunch or don't do it at all.
Yes, agreed. It's got to keep popping up throughout. And you know what they could have done, too, is they could have done something like what they do with It and make the dad more of a malevolent presence where, like, they imagine creatures and monsters or whatever that come in and, like, ruin their fun and stuff. And then they turn around and it's like, oh, it's their dad, you know? It's like, anyway.
Yeah, that's all I got. All right, so, Mike, do you want to... What would this movie be like with Tom Cruise? I mean, it would be the same because he's not really in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. I think Elijah Wood looks more like a young Tom Cruise than a young Tom Hanks. I'll say that much.
Yeah. I can see that. Do you want to Stan Lee yourself into here? Is there a place that you would find yourself? Because there's not a lot of adults in this movie intentionally, right? Like, it's a kid's story told by kids about kids. Kind of for kids, question mark? There's the cop. There's the king. There's Dr. Melfi. There's Hanks. But, like...
I expected a scene with the ice cream man or something, but I don't know. No, I don't know where I'd be. You know what I think I'd be at the very end. I'd be like, hey, Hanks, get off that runway. It's dangerous out here. It's about where I'd put myself.
All right. Yeah, I don't know where I would go. I'm going to keep myself out of the movie.
All right.
You know,
that's
totally
fair. I just don't
want to be part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess the question, the answer for sure is, does Tom Hanks do anything in this movie to become America's dad? Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
like, he's purely dad through and through. And he's not a character either. He's just a caricature of just being dad, right? Father. He's fatherly advice.
He's father incarnate, right? You might say. Yeah, and it's very, like, groan-inducing at times, too.
So, Mike, the last thing we have to do is to nominate this for the Woodies, the best and worst of Tom Hanks' filmography. Do we want to nominate this for worst film?
I don't think it deserves to be on the list because he's just not on screen enough for me to consider it a Tom Hanks movie in that kind of way. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't think it's enough of a Tom Hanks movie for it to...
So what I will say is most terrible. Wasted performance then.
Yes,
because
yeah.
Why did we watch this movie if...
If Tom Hanks is barely in this.
Best ensemble, no. Best fight, no. Because, again, this is all sort of him. Dance party, wardrobe, no. Death line, freak out, no. Soundtrack, no. Love story, best or worst. And then do we want to nominate Elijah Wood for best non-Hanks actor male? I mean, he's a great kid actor, but also it's kind of just...
You know what's weird, though? Wait a minute. Hold on.
Okay.
So he might deserve a special award now. He might deserve the, like, cross... cast award where, like,
he was in The Trust with Cage.
Yep. But wasn't he also, was he in something with Keanu? I'm sorry, that was Shia. And I'm thinking, yeah, and I'm thinking of The Witch Hunter with Vin Diesel. So he was in a Vin Diesel movie. Never mind. I thought we had, like, the crossover. He was never in anything with Charlize. Okay. All right.
So, yeah, he's no, the Russian guy. I can't pull it right now.
Stolmare? Peter Stolmare?
Yeah.
He's no, Peter Stolmare still holds the title to that.
Let me see if there's been anything else. I've seen a bunch of his movies that I can't really recommend. Also, as we record this, it is in the midst of Fantastic Fest, and if I were there, I would be seeing him every day and texting my friend, like, oh, I just saw Elijah. You know, he's nice. I haven't really talked to him. Is Elijah Wood in anything else? He was in Happy Feet, so he was almost in a Shia movie, but he was in Surf's Up. But...
You know who directed that, though, was Mad Max's own.
George Miller?
Yep. There's a sort of Charlize crossover.
He was in Sin City and Eternal Sunshine, which feel like we could have covered them, but we didn't. He was in The Faculty, which Wistful covered.
It's also got Tuna Girl. What's her name? From Fast and Furious. It's got...
Tuna Girl.
Yeah, she sells tuna.
Mia Toretto.
Yeah, Mia's in that movie. Sorry, I didn't mean... I just...
Tuna Girl. You can't tune a piano, or you can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish. He plays Video Game Boy in Back to the Future 2. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. In Wild Gunman. You have to use your hands. It's like a baby's toy.
Any other thoughts? We have the one award, Radio Flyer.
Sorry, guys.
Most wasted performance. That's fine. Mike, the good news is that next episode, so next week over on Cruise Club, we're going to do Magnolia.
Oof,
last week
yeah.
we did Eyes Wide Shut. And the next episode here on this feed, A League of Their Own.
Da-da-da-da.
Very exciting. So A League of Their Own, Sleepless in Seattle, Philadelphia, Forrest Gump, Apollo 13.
Ooh, A League of Their Own.
Toy Story. That
right in time for October baseball.
Ooh, yeah. Playoff baseball, baby.
Very cool.
Coming out October 18th. Yeah, we are now in October officially for Radio Flyer. We're kicking off Spooky Month with Radio Flyer, the most scary movie of all. For all things Hanks from the Memories, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, hanks@cageclub.me. Let us know what you think of the movie, the show, whatever. Come back in 2 weeks for A League of Their Own. Go check out Cruise Club. You know, just go do those things. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks for A League of Their Own right here on Hanks for the Memories.
That day, we wished the king never find out about the mess we made. He never did.